We're considering today the fourth of our series, The Great Entrepreneurial Revolution. Our theme today, goal setting and reaching. We've been calling for a revolution, and the attitudes that people have about themselves is related to their work. Our thesis is both altruistic and futuristic. For I believe that in a whole universe, the consciousness of every person has an influence on the general consciousness of the race. Certainly it's good and important to work on yourself in terms of manifesting prosperity and success in your life. We're interested in something more, recruiting entrepreneurs who will selflessly act as what we could call change agents in bringing the entrepreneurial spirit to your office or shop, to bring health and stability to the marketplaces of the world. This is a large order. But I want us to think about it. I read somewhere recently that 9 out of 10, out of every 10 people, have no definite plan for their life and simply drift along aimlessly. 9 out of 10 people. That's sad. You may recall Lewis Carroll's classic work, Alice in Wonderland, where Alice asks the directions of the Mad Hatter. And he says, "Where do you want to go?" Alice replies, "I really don't know." Then said the Hatter, "Any direction will do." Again, 9 out of 10, moving aimlessly through life, through day after day after day, doing things habitually without any sense of direction, mechanically, living with no real goals. Can you see yourself in this? Webster says a goal is the end which a person intends to reach or attain. Henry J. Kaiser, the successful industrialist, used to say, "Decide what you want most out of life, and simply write down your goals and plan to reach them." That seems to be an oversimplification. What he seems to be saying is what Socrates had in mind when someone stopped along the road and asked him how to get to Mount Olympus. Remember, he said, "Just make every step you take go in that direction." Now, mentally reflect for a minute on the directions you would like to take in your life. What are some of the goals that you would like to set for yourself in your work, in your finances, in your career, in your relationships, in your home? Now, as you mentally review your list of goals, I want you to note especially how there's a tendency to approach the matter with what I would call the acquisitive instinct. The typical prosperity course in this field of practical metaphysics involves such things as visualizing bags of gold and treasure mapping for endless variety of things. I say this is a gross materialization of a beautiful spiritual law. And as I say that, I realize that I'm not very popular with my confreres in the field of metaphysics. In many cases, the teaching is centered around the demonstration of prosperity, prayer and treatment for prosperity, visualizing prosperity, setting goals for achieving prosperity. You might say, "Well, what's wrong with that?" Certainly nothing wrong with money or having things. It's certainly good to have an abundance of substance and supply, and perhaps salary increases and healthy dividends and interest. But in many cases, unconsciously, it involves selling our soul for the mess of pottage, or achieving things at the expense of our greater good rather than out of the expanse of our inner self. One of the great ideas in the teaching of Jesus is, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you." And what this says, very simply, seek first to be, and you will have. This calls for personal growth, not just good luck in demonstrating supply. Something must change within you. Not a matter of your fortune changing and money starting coming to you and jobs starting coming to you. Something must change in your consciousness, your faith, your perspective. When it does, by the law of demonstration, things will begin to work for you. But they were working naturally, out of a consciousness of the activity of the law working in your life. Here's a simple illustration. Imagine, if you will, a tree complete with a vast rooted system. A great trunk, many branches, covered with leaves, laden with fruit. What would you rather have? The rootage or the fruitage? It may seem most practical to take the fruit. Out of our acquisitive instinct, that's the first thing we want when we're looking for a demonstration supply. I want the money. I want the jobs. But the fruit, when plucked from the tree, quickly ripens. Then it must be consumed quickly or it rots. But the roots are part of a system that perpetually produces the fruit. So what this says is, if you're setting goals, instead of saying, I want a sum of money, how much better to say, in effect, I want to tap into the system that we call a tree, which involves the perpetual outforming of fruitage. In seeking money, I want to achieve a consciousness of universal supply. This is very subtle. It's one of the important points that is often overlooked in the study of truth. Don't lose sight of who you are in your goal setting and of life's transcendent goal of perfecting itself as you. The most important goal for you and me is fulfilling our uniqueness, becoming a fully functioning person, giving expression to the fullness of our God potential. We don't lay all that aside when you go out in the marketplace to earn money or demonstrate supply. The promise is, if we keep the whole tree in mind and in view, Jesus' term, seek first the kingdom, then all things will be added. The salary increase, the prosperity, the things, and without permitting these things to become the object of our life. Let me emphasize, setting goals is vitally important. And the greatest value is that you're looking forward to something. Because you're essentially a forward-looking, forward-thinking, forward-acting creature. If a person ever loses touch with his personal dream, his sense of where he's going, then the center or core is gone. This is why, as a good example, retirement is so dangerous. Because even the body doesn't function well when you have nothing to look forward to. When you're not goal-striving, not looking forward, you're not really living. So the entrepreneur always has the forward look. We might call it nostalgia for the future. It maintains in us a kind of elan or enthusiasm. And the importance of this spirit in the workplace is underscored by a research project conducted by University of Southern California management professor Sherry Connolly on what she calls the work spirit. This project has revealed that people who maintain a sense of vision and purpose, along with a realistic forward-looking goals, these people exhibit enormous energy. They work in the constant awareness that what they're doing fits into a larger picture. And they can see how what they do makes an important difference in the world as a whole. If you think about someone you know who has an obvious sense of direction, who always seems to connect his activities to an overall theme, chances are very likely that this person has gone through some self-examination and clarification such as we're dealing with now. Because the fact is, the more you know where you want to go, the greater the chances are that you'll get there. And opportunities will always fall into the line. Goal setting, then, is a practice that every person should cultivate. Where do you want to go? What would you like to achieve? Goals are all about aspiring and reaching. As the poet says, a man's reach should exceed his grasp. That's what's a heaven for. The goal is a useful direction. It is essentially a prod to keep you working on your own statue, as the philosopher says. But it is important to keep yourself flexible in mind and open-ended as regards your goals. It is important to be sensitive to challenges and blocks in your way, which may and often do indicate the need to change directions. You're not an automaton with an inertial pattern all built in, taking you on inexorably to a fixed end. You're a growing, evolving, expanding spiritual being. As we're told, it is not yet manifest what you shall be. Sometimes the tendency in goal setting is to center the attention on a car, or a deep freeze, or a job, or a house, or a fixed sum of money. As I say, certainly you can have these things. As a spiritual being, you should experience affluence. You should enjoy the all things added. But we cannot overlook the law. Seek first the kingdom. If you take the fruit from the tree, ignoring the requirements of sustenance for the roots, you may come to experience a very special kind of want. We could call it the Midas consciousness. Remember in Greek legends, Midas was the king of Phrygia, was given a grant by Dionysus, the power of turning everything to gold by touch. Many have dreamed of such things. Just imagine everything you touched, a stone, a book, a tree, the ground, everything you touched turned to gold. In time, the special power to Midas, unfortunately, became a curse, because even the food and drink that he touched turned to gold when he touched it. So there was no way to survive. The need is not for money or things, but for consciousness, the consciousness of oneness with the universe, and its mystical process of first the grain, then the ear, then the full grain, then the ear. Many persons, short-sightedly, always reach for the things, for the fruit from the tree, forsaking the tremendous universal process through which these things could be perpetuated in his life. It's like the person on the street asking for a dollar for a cup of coffee. The dollar is very soon spent. Then where does he go? What he really needs is some sort of a contact, a plugging in with the universal supply, which we think of as in terms of a job, a means of earning his keep. We all need that in life. It's so easy to overlook that in our acquisitive desires. Certainly we want to need the fruit, but the entrepreneur wisely knows that the fruit is picked, that is picked, is separated from the source. And he goes through a ripening process, which is actually a matter of rotting. The greater need is the whole tree system, by which we may have a perpetual manifestation of fruit. So this is what Jesus means when he says, seek first the kingdom and its righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. One of our common failures is absence of singleness of purpose. You see, when you're working or praying for a goal or an aspiration, you cannot straddle the fence, keeping one foot on either side. You may want to believe that you can receive your heart's desire, but perhaps you can't quite believe that you will receive it. So you may hedge your goal by thinking, well, if I don't get it, I can always do something else. It's a kind of self-protection so that you won't be disappointed. You plan a compromise, which you see is actually another kind of goal. So you wind up looking in two directions at once, reaching for goals for two separate sources. Paul talks about this. He says, but let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. He that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. This attitude of double-mindedness is much more prevalent within all of us than we realize. When he says to ask, this means to claim and affirm. Let him ask in faith. Let him claim his good. Affirm the truth for himself, that he's one with the universal supply. To receive of the Lord means the demonstration of the law. It's important to get that. Otherwise, we think of God out there reaching into his basket and handing down some goodie for us, setting the basket of good before us on our doorstep. To receive of the Lord means the demonstration of the law. And the law works if we work with it. Of course, our goals must be realistic, not fantasies conjured up out of a Pollyanna teaching of truth that says or implies you can have anything you want. You can have anything you want. You read this often in metaphysical teaching, and it's true, if you're willing to pay the price. A young person might be moved by all the excitement of the Olympics, as seen from Seoul, and set a goal to become a diver, like that beautiful young man, Greg Louganis. Obviously, you'll never realize such an achievement without aspiring toward it. You must dream. Set a goal for yourself. Envision greater things in your life. But setting the goal is only a small part of the process. You'll have to alter your whole way of life. It's a matter of long years of very difficult training and discipline with a rigid set of priorities. Paraphrasing a statement that I often make, success is not just taking your place on the victory stand while the officials place a gold medal on your neck. It is earning the right to be there. So the goal should realistically include the commitment to do all the things that prepare the way for you to be there. Again, make every step you take move in that direction. One of the pitfalls of setting goals is setting more goals than is possible to accomplish in the time frame available. It's so common to look to someone else's achievements and not see all the work that's gone into them. Let's not see the whole picture. You may set your goal too big, a project too ambitious. Then when you do not reach the goal within your time frame, you may tend to give up, or at least make the dream smaller. So you take this failure as a signal that the original idea was wrong. Actually, it is more likely that what is wrong is the time frame that you've set. When people lessen their dreams or abandon them entirely, they dampen their spirit in a very dangerous way, starting on the path to what is often called burnout. Don't make your dreams smaller, but give yourself more time to accomplish them. Remember, time is relative. You live in eternity, and you have all the time you need to do the things that should be done by you. Some persons who feel that they're not getting what they want or deserve suffer not from expectations that are too high, but from ones that are too low. You see, negative expectations are a kind of goals, too, and they're very true and destructive. If you do not think you're capable of doing something, it's not very likely that you'll be able to do so. Many persons have been saddled with school achievement or aptitude tests that indicated how smart they are or how stupid they are. The test quite often says, in effect, don't expect too much because you don't have it. This is sad because quite often a person is adorned with a number almost tattooed upon him. It tells him where he stands on the scale of bright down to ignorant. It is unfortunate that large numbers of young people are stigmatized for life by these limitations. Many creative and intelligent people have been told by their teachers they were not bright enough to expect too much of themselves in life. The classic is the story of Thomas Edison, who was sent home by his teacher as an unteachable dunce. Tragically, too many people internalize these expectations, then begin to expect less than the best from themselves. One of these may find himself, years later, working in a way that denies or ignores his potential, which is always present. Kierkegaard said, our life always expresses the result of our dominant thoughts. The things you expect and believe and say to yourself determine what you accomplish in life. Limiting beliefs erode your motivation and your faith in yourself to accomplish what you want. If you want to make significant accomplishments at work, your thoughts and conversations with yourself need to contain dreams and goals that support these achievements. What are you expecting? What are you believing? Even more, what are you saying to yourself? That latter is a problem that many persons have. We all talk to ourselves. We don't like to admit it. Often we say, I don't know why they asked me to do this because I can't do it. I don't have the ability. I don't have the training. I'm not bright enough. Something to that effect. We say these things to ourselves quite often. Or else we make some mistake and we say, what a dunderhead I am. It seems to reflect a state of consciousness that's been with us all the time. What are you saying to yourself? When we talk about limits, we're not just referring to negative thinking. Limits, too, are built into your perceptions. People see what they look for. It has been said, If you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. If you have a sense of being discriminated against by people, wherever you are, then wherever you are, you receive discrimination. Little do you know that it's something in your consciousness that's hitting that nail on the head. If you have a great sense of love, everywhere you go, you receive love. The loving consciousness tends to produce this, or perhaps more than anything else, to perceive it. Because maybe when you feel that everybody is unloving, the unlovingness that you see is the hammer that you're holding. When you change that, you discover that all the while there was a lot of love there. You just weren't seeing it, accepting it. We might look a little more closely at the nature of negative beliefs. By definition, it's a conviction that something is not possible. There are a lot of examples from the past. Everyone told the Wright brothers that people could never fly. Everyone said that the four-minute mile was physiologically impossible until Roger Bannister came along and proved them wrong. There was a time when everyone said that electronics were an impractical fad. There are always those who close off the possibility that the future could be decisively different, who project the past to continue indefinitely into the future. But the entrepreneur knows that the only certainty is change itself. But the effect of such irrational assumptions is that people don't try, don't reach out, don't take risks. Don't dream the impossible dream. This calls to mind my story about the one who I call the most nearsighted person in history. This was the man who worked for the U.S. Patent Office in 1860. He resigned his job because he felt guilty to continue to take money in a department that should really close down because all inventions had already been made. 1860. Can you get excited about your work? Can you believe that the best in terms of your contribution to your employer and the best in terms of the role that it will play in the whole world is yet to come? Perhaps you've been looking too narrow-mindedly at your work. Perhaps you've been failing to see the great potential in it and in you and through it. Set some new goals for yourself. Again, as I said, not have goals that fulfill the acquisitive instinct, supposed to have more money, to have better jobs, to have cars and have all the things, the houses and the fur coats and so forth. Not have goals, but be goals. Goals that deal with consciousness, with attitudes, with perceptions, with faith, with vision. And you may be a change agent in your company, helping it to set new goals of world service. The company will prosper, and of course, you will prosper too. Not very many people have broadened the horizon of their perceptions to think in this altruistic way. This is what I'm calling the entrepreneurial revolution. Because I believe the world will never come to its potential economically, industrially, creatively, until workers one by one begin to realize that they're a part of a great world consciousness. They have something to give, far over and above beyond just doing the work that you're called upon to do. As we said a few weeks ago, you may say after receiving some reprimand or even being dismissed from your job, I don't understand it. I do all they expect me to do. But the question is, do you expect enough of yourself? Now, you might note that some persons think the setting of goals is manipulating the law, or the attempt to do so. Actually, setting goals gives direction to life. For without goals, you have no direction. You drift along, buffeted about by the winds and storms of fate and circumstance. A good illustration is when you go out in a sailing vessel, you don't always go with the wind, because the wind isn't always blowing the way you want to go. You select your objective, and you start sailing toward it. You may have to tack part of the way or all of the way. Whether the wind is behind you or against you, you still use the wind to gain your objective. You set your sails. And the wind does the work. You're not manipulating the wind, you're using it. As Ella Wheeler Wilcox said in her poem, writing some reflections as she was sitting on the east side of New York watching sailing vessels ply up the east river to their berth. She says, one ship drives east, another drives west, with the selfsame winds that blow. 'Tis the set of the sails and not the gales that determines the way you go. The great excuses, but things are not going my way. The times are bad. There are no jobs for people like me. This is the way the winds blow. But it's the set of the sails and not the gales that determine the way you go. Depends upon your attitude and the way you deal with these things. The way you dig down to the deep depths within you and release your great potential. Setting goals and reaching for them calls for an active and well-harnessed imagination. Important thing, spend a little time working on your goals one by one. In a quiet time or meditation, imagine yourself actually achieving your goal. See yourself doing everything attached to it. Not just the final outcome. Imagine yourself doing the things that work together to fulfill the goal. Feel the sense of gratitude, the sense of accomplishment. This will be a highly energizing experience. And put your goal or aspiration in the form of an affirmative prayer. We use affirmations in our teaching. It's a very important means of projecting a consciousness, unifying yourself with the divine law. So write a sentence that describes one of your goals as already accomplished. And as you write it, pause a moment to see in your mind's eye what you're aspiring to or reaching for. Just write a sentence. If you're looking for a job, your goal is to have a better job or a position in the job. Affirmatively, state this as if it were already done. I am grateful that I now have the kind of work that I long to do, to achieve, whatever it is. Put it in a positive statement, a sentence. Experience all the feelings associated with the accomplishment of this, the gratitude, the exhilaration, sense of fulfillment. The affirmation should be short and completely positive. For instance, I am successful and in tune with the ceaseless universal flow. An affirmation should be stated always in the present tense, as if you've already accomplished your goal. One of the techniques that I suggest is the use of the projected diary. In this, you project yourself in imagination to a period that is commensurate with any of the deadlines you've set for yourself. I don't like the word deadlines. I use the word alive lines for obvious reasons. So project yourself to a time, a period in advance. Then in your imagination, look back upon the experience as if it were already accomplished. In other words, you see what you want to occur as if it had already come to pass. I'm grateful for the increased faith in prospering substance and for the supply that has met my needs. You get the sense of achievement. Get into your consciousness. Not hoping, not wishing for good luck, not maybe things will work out if God sees things my way. It's so important to get the thought that it's the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom, Jesus says. The divine desire is to fulfill in you all that you can imagine, all that you can believe and achieve, perceive you will achieve. That's the divine flow within you, always present. The need is to accept it and to see yourself as being fulfilled in it. If you translate all your goals into positive affirmations of truth, you'll be able to take hold of them as a working process. The goals should be things that you can really see and feel yourself doing. An assessment that pushes you beyond what you've already done, but not so far ahead that you'll be setting yourself up for failure. Repeat your affirmation goals daily. You may want to create an affirmation for each one of the goals that you set for yourself. Write them all on a card. Place it somewhere you'll see it regularly, on your desk, your dressing table mirror, or the refrigerator door. Not that you'll repeat these parrot-like by rote. You see them as a means of tuning in upon a divine flow which is already present, accepting it, rejoicing in it, becoming a part of it. So become an entrepreneur. Set yourself up for success and accomplishment with your affirmation goals. And even more, altruistically, become a change agent in your office or shop, helping your co-workers in your company to become goal-oriented in a spiritual sense. It's altruistic. but it's vital. I'd like you to be still for just a moment. I want you to imagine the tree that we talked about. We see the tree stretched out before us, drawn on paper so you can see the roots and the trunk and the branches and the twigs and the leaves and the fruit. See the fruit as symbolizing all the things that are part of the material world we live in, and especially things that perhaps in your personal desires are part of your perspective. Center your attention on the process involved in this tree. The roots that draw the sustenance from the soil, in a very real sense drawing the support from the universe in which it exists. Flowing through the trunk, and the branches, the twigs, the leaves, the fruit. One whole process. Get the sense that when you build your consciousness, when you gain the fulfillment of your potential as a spiritual being, you achieve the awareness of this whole tree, which becomes a whole process. You identify it in wholeness. You don't think in terms of the desperate need to pluck the fruit. It soon ripens and rots. And you pluck again and again and again. Rather, you see yourself identified in oneness with the whole process of the tree. So this becomes your consciousness. And get the sense that the fruit, which is beautifully a part of our lives, comes out of the dynamic activity of this process of the universal system of which you're a part. So you always have the fruit that you need. You always have the supply, the things, the jobs, the baubles that you desire. But they come out of the expansion of your awareness of your whole self. Roots, trunk, branches, twigs, leaves, and fruit. Not out of the expense of your soul. And you realize this great example. You never know lack again. It was Mike Todd who said once, many times I've been poor. Turned around. He said, many times I've had lack, but I've never been poor. That's the important thing. You may lack for things at times, but you never really have a poverty awareness. Because you're in tune with the divine flow. That flow is in you. So we say, get a sense of entrepreneurship. As an entrepreneur, be in tune with the spiritual flow in which you'll always be prospered and fulfilled in all your ways. Even more, you'll be a part of a consciousness in the world. It leads for stability and equality and substance and fulfillment. Let's just give thanks for this. We give thanks for the truth that makes us free. So be it.